Hello and welcome to the Magic Life podcast. Today I'm here with Morgan and she is a resident of Magic Life. Where is it? Windsmuse?
Yeah, Windsmuse.
And we thought that it would be interesting to hear a little bit from Morgan and her views on things. And to do it slightly differently, we're also walking around Alexandra Palace. So it's like a walk and talk, not sitting behind a desk or anything like that. We can get some fresh air. We can have a walk. Maybe we can even have a hot chocolate. It has to be a good hot chocolate though, because I don't like bad hot chocolates. And then, yeah, so, Morgan, thanks very much for joining me.
It's okay.
So tell me a bit about yourself. Where are you originally from?
I grew up in Maidenhead in Berkshire. It's a small village with farms everywhere. And then moved to the town, still pretty much farms everywhere as well. So I grew up with a lot of greenery around me.
So I bet living in London's a bit of a difference, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not used to the city.
Do you prefer the countryside?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What is it you don't like about London?
It's too busy.
Too much noise?
Yeah, it's too busy everywhere. You can't... I'm like, most I see out my window is one dead tree.
Some poor decrepit tree fighting for its little existence in a pavement full of other trees that are struggling for the same light. Yeah. Well, look, you're in open air now.
Yeah.
Ali Pali, I mean, been here for absolutely centuries. It used to be where the BBC, you see that big radio mast up there? That's where the BBC used to broadcast from. It was the first broadcast was done from Ali Pali. Actually, we'll go that way so we can have a look at it. And they did that for a really long time, broadcasting from here. They don't do it so much now. And then I think Ali Pali's had lots of different sort of types of lives. When I was a kid, around the back of Ali Pali, there used to be a car auction that my dad used to bring me to and bore me the hell out of. But now they've got an ice skating rink in there and they do a lot of darts tournaments that are featured on TV, and I think even concerts as well. And then they have a great fireworks display up here, so you should come out and check it out. It's cool. So tell me a bit more about early life when you was like growing up in, where is it?
Maidenhead.
Okay.
Well, I went to the same school everyone went to in that village. All the one my sister, my brother went to. My dad, obviously, works quite a bit. He owns a roofing business. My mum is a support worker for autistic people. I was quite good in primary school, and when I got to secondary school, I became a bit of a menace, but I still did well in my exams, even though I was predicted all ungraded.
Yeah.
I ended up passing 6 GCSEs. And then went to college. I did my sports science, and then I got sponsored by Nike. I left college during COVID, and I got sponsored by Nike.
No way.
Because I was doing competitive running. And I did my personal training level 3 with them. Worked in a gym.
Yeah. Cool. So what happened from there? I mean, you said that your mum was a support worker, and in the car driving up here, you said that she started getting the idea that you may have autism.
Yeah, she said from when I was a kid, I was very rigid, to be honest. I would only wear certain colours, certain clothes. She could never get me in a dress. Still very rarely I wear a dress. I think the first time I wore a dress for the whole day was at my mum's wedding, and that was a fight to get it on me.
Yeah.
And then she always thought, you know, there's something a little bit different about me. And then I ended up, when I went into hospital, they thought I might have autism, the psychiatrist, and then ended up fast-tracking me for an assessment. Turns out I do have it.
And is that your official sort of diagnosis? By the way, let's interrupt here.
Yeah.
This is the BBC Tower. This is where it all used to come from. Look, and on the wall there's a blue plaque. It says the world's first regular high-definition television service was inaugurated here by the BBC on the 2nd of November 1936. Pretty old.
Mm.
Anyway, going back to your diagnosis, is that your official diagnosis then?
I've got a couple. I've got EPD, autism, and complex PTSD.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did they sort of manifest that those conditions? How did you sort of,
Well, I remember I just left a year-long relationship. It wasn't too good, let's put it that way. And then ended up speaking to crisis teams and stuff, and they diagnosed me with EPD when I was 17. Started on a lot of medication. Nothing really seemed to work. Then everything started spiraling. When I was in hospital, I was getting new diagnosis, and then they would take it off, say, no, it's misdiagnosed. And I've been through every diagnosis in the book. But the three ones that are standing is the EPD, complex PTSD, and autism.
And how do they manifest themselves out in daily life?
Well, it's hard to differentiate because all of my diagnoses actually overlap, especially when it comes to like moods. Everyone with, especially EPD, the mood swings are very, very extreme.
Yeah.
I don't really feel nothing like neutral. I'm either neutral, really, really happy, or I'm really, really depressed. That's it. I feel nothing or either end of the spectrum. There's nothing in between. So that's quite hard, as well as with EPD, you have like attachment issues and all sorts of things. Sometimes people hallucinate with it. I hallucinate as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just
it's
so everyone
rare,
knows, I'm not a therapist.
No.
I'm not a medical expert or anything like that.
Mm.
You know, I'm the marketing guy, so if I ask silly questions, you put me straight, okay?
Because,
you know, and obviously this is not advice in any way,
but
I'm interested to find out. And more importantly, I think by you talking about it might help other people understand what they're going through.
Yeah.
So tell me about these hallucinations. How do they play out?
So I think I first started with seeing things, seeing shadows, like I call them shadow people. It's just basically tall silhouettes. And they don't really do nothing. They just stand there. You can't see a face or anything. It's just a tall shadow. And then that was from when I was quite young, to be honest. And obviously I just thought, oh, they're ghosts or whatever, you know. And then eventually I started hearing voices. And then eventually they just keep developing into more and more. So I started off with one. And now I've got seven constantly talking to me, but it's getting easier to manage them now, especially when you realise what's wrong with you, you know?
Yes.
You realise that you are ill and, you know, you're not going crazy, you're just unwell.
Yeah.
So it's not as bad as people seem to think. It can get quite bad sometimes. For me, it's when I'm off my medication, it gets a lot worse. The visual hallucinations can be quite bad, especially if I feel like I've been triggered by something or I've going into an episode, then it can get quite bad, but it never seems to last too long. The voices are every day, but you just grow to get used to them.
So these voices, do you recognise them being part of you, or are they like separate, they sound different?
They all sound different, like they all seem to have their own personality, but they're not me. You know, it's not like DID, you know, with the multiple personalities. I'm not like that. It's just, I hear them from outside my head. It kind of sounds like they're coming for a radio.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to explain, but all different genders. Some are genderless, some are old, some are young. It just, some of them are quite funny, to be honest.
All right. But
yeah, so they do make me laugh sometimes.
Do you name them?
No. Never, because I felt like if I name them and then I finally get better, then I might, you know, get attached. But I don't want to name them. I don't want to have anything to do with them, to be honest.
Yeah. I suppose that's a good strategy, isn't it? Because
yeah.
You're not really paying, you're not giving them virility by naming them, if I suppose.
Yeah.
In my mind, anyway.
Yeah.
So why sort of recognise it? You know that it's, you recognise that it's maybe an illness.
Yeah.
And they're not really, they're fantasy, if you know.
Yeah.
Maybe. They're not real by, and I suppose naming them would give them virility, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I get that.
Can we go that way? We'll go back, we'll have a look at the sights of London. We can see all of London from the top of here. So how did you feel when you were diagnosed? Was it relief?
Yeah, it was, because I was always thinking, like, what's wrong with me? And then when it took a while for them to diagnose, because obviously they need to make sure they're doing the right diagnosis. So it was quite stressful. They have to ask a lot of questions, and especially if you're in hospital under a section, they have to monitor you, and it's like you're always being watched, and you know, things are being written down every single time. So it was quite frustrating at that point, because I just wanted to know. Once I found out, it was okay, but especially with the EUPD diagnosis, a lot of professionals see it quite negatively. There's a lot of stigma around it. So when you like say, oh, you've got EPD, they have like these false conceptions about it, that like people with EPD are manipulative or attention seeking, and it's not at all. But
how does that make you feel?
It's frustrating, because obviously coming from someone that has it, it's, you know what you're like. Sometimes it's quite hard to explain, especially with my autism. People ask me, like, oh, how are you feeling? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't really know what I feel, to be honest. But I even know if it's good or bad. That's it.
Right.
But if I, like, try and reach out for help, and then, like, the other day I was at the doctor's, they said, oh, this is a part of attention seeking. And I was like, oh. It gets on my nerves, but you get so used to it after a while, to be honest.
So do you feel sometimes that you're not being listened to, that you're, that makes you frustrated?
Yeah, like feeling misunderstood is quite a big thing for me. It's just, and when you can't get it across in the right way, you can't explain it, especially when you're in that moment, then it's, you know, just it gets sort of gets down on you, like, oh, why am I like this, why couldn't I just tell them then, or you know, stuff like that. But you've got to learn to be nice to yourself. That's what I've tried to practice.
Being nice to yourself.
Yeah, trying to be patient.
You we were going to do this podcast about a week ago, weren't we?
Yeah.
But you felt that you were declining a bit, or maybe Cheryl noticed that you weren't really on tip-top condition. And then what happened from there?
I actually went into hospital. It was only for the night. I just was not doing great at all. And they got ambulance out and took me. I can't remember if they took me under the Capacity Act or not. I still have my capacity. They just, because it's ambulance, they can't really. Their Capacity Act is very, very basic, so they took me for that when I still have it.
Yeah.
And they assessed me and they said, you can go home. And I still asked for support then, and they said, no, you're fine, you can go home. And I was like, okay. I got home and then they told me that they had already called you.
Yeah. And that's all right. Yeah. I was a bit worried that you know, that maybe, because that time when we met at Wynn's and we started having a chat, and then I sort of asked you whether you wanted to do a podcast, if you thought you might like to do it.
Yeah.
And then I thought, have I made her ill by asking? Maybe you'd built it up and it's like, oh no, I don't really want to do this now.
No, it's just me. It happens like a lot of people. It usually happens at night for me, to be honest, because I tend to, you know, hide it and like let it build up all day, and then at night I just
manifest too much.
Yeah, especially when you're like alone with your own thoughts, then it's you start to spiral. So yeah, it's all right.
Yeah,
you get there eventually.
How did you realise you were sort of going downhill? Was it was it Cheryl or the support staff noticed that something wasn't right?
I believe that time I actually called the crisis team for myself. They ended up saying they were going to call an ambulance, but then eventually I called 111. They sent an ambulance out and then got me to go to hospital to be assessed.
Yeah.
But by that time, I'd already come out of the episode. I knew I was still, you know, unwell, but I wasn't in the breaking point anymore. Because it never seems to last long with me. Mine maybe, you know, like a crisis for me lasts maybe a couple of hours maximum.
Well, it's a bit windy, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bit windy. Let's go and see if we can get a hot chocolate. So, when you have an episode, how does it sort of, how bad can it get?
Well, it can get to the point of, you know, attempting to take your life. Or, for me, my episodes can either go euphoric, which is like, you know how people with bipolar can go manic?
Right.
People with EPD, they can't go manic, but it's pretty similar, but it's nowhere near as, you know, it doesn't last as long. So people call it euphoric episodes, which means for me it's I'm on edge, but I look really happy, like I'm really hyper, my eyes are very wide, you know, I'm all over the place, and quite impulsive at that point. But with like a depressive side to it, then I just like lay in bed and be all depressed, and then maybe sometimes I could end up attempting to take my life, but lately that's been quite rare, to be honest.
And why do you think that's subsided?
I've just been more stable. This is the longest I've been out of hospital now.
Yeah.
Since my whole mental health journey started, to be honest. 5 months yesterday.
Congrats.
I think, yeah.
And is that in part with the care that you're getting?
Yeah. You know what? This is the first place it's actually been, you know, consistent for me. Everywhere else, my first supported living, they were actually for people who came out of care homes. So, you know, children with no parents and stuff like that. So they didn't really know how to deal with me because I did live with my family. I was never put into care like that. And then obviously at that point I was really all over the place. The medication wasn't correct. It was just I had to handle my own medication. So I wasn't taking it. So I was, you know, just all over the place all the time, in and out of there, in hospital and stuff. They eventually said they can't handle me. Moved me somewhere else for learning disabilities, which I don't have.
Yeah.
So they didn't know how to handle me either.
Yeah.
And then finally, when I went into hospital after that, I only stayed there about a month, went into hospital again, and then they put me on a section 3. I was there for just over 4 months, I think.
What's a section 3?
6 months. It's a section, so you're detained by law for treatment in hospital.
Okay. So you're sort of not at liberty to leave or do anything that you'd want to do?
No, they have pretty much total control. If you deny medication, they can forcibly inject you. if you want to leave, that you can't leave unless the psychiatrist allows it. It's very, very strict and intense. A lot of people on a section three, depending on their diagnosis and what they're experiencing, they could be on 2-to-1s, 3-to-1s. I've seen up to 6-to-1s for some people.
Really?
Yeah. Usually people in psychosis get quite high, people having to watch them at all times. Yeah.
You know, you strike me as very articulate and intelligent.
Yeah.
So when you're under some sort of section order,
yeah,
that must be like super frustrating.
It's quite hard, and I understand it's for people's safety, whether that be other people's safety or your own safety. It can be quite frustrating not being allowed to even go out for a smoke or just for a walk. You're not allowed to the shops, and everything there is very rigid as well, to be honest. You can't have deodorants, you can't have, some people can't have bottle caps because of their risk of swallowing. All sorts, no TV remotes, you have to ask the staff. It's just, it's frustrating. Certain shampoos, everything, it has to be all, everything. Some people have to wear certain anti-ligature clothes.
Yeah.
I was in that for a while. They strip your bed sheets, no curtains, no shower curtain, nothing. You just, yeah.
So, what, you don't have any clothing at all?
For me, they took my underwear, socks. They made me wear anti-ligature clothes, which was like shorts and a really itchy top that you couldn't rip.
Yeah.
Especially if you go into like a seclusion room, they usually tend to try and put you in that, which it's very uncomfortable. They're very heavy as well.
We're going to walk round.
Yeah.
Right, this is a little boating lake.
Yeah.
Pretty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
My niece would love this.
It's great. Yeah. You can go on these, you know. We should go out on one. We should go on. It's a little, what do you call these?
Pedalo.
Pedalos.
Yeah.
Little pedalos we can go round and pedal round. So what we'll do, I've got a plan. We'll walk round again and then we'll get some hot chocolate, because I think we deserve a hot chocolate. All on me, of course. And then we'll sit there. What's your name again, Fifi? Fifi's a support worker. You haven't heard much of Fifi. Say hello, Fifi, into there.
Hello.
Hello. We're just having a walk together. You've also self-harmed, right?
Yes.
And the last time we discussed this, because I have no clue about these things.
Yeah.
Right? And I think I recall you saying to me that it's like a release for you.
Yeah, it depends for some people. Mine has changed over time. At first it was more of like a self-hatred. I thought I deserved it. And then eventually it becomes quite addictive, to be honest. It's quite hard to stop, because then you get used to it. Every time you feel stressed out, you harm yourself. And then that spiral like continues. And especially with social media now, they've like kind of romanticized mental illness and especially self-harm. It's quite a scary place when you get onto that side of social media, because it becomes competitive. You see other people's like wounds. I've seen people explain in detail suicide attempts, everything, like. And then people get ideas, especially the younger people who are just starting out. They get ideas, start copying and then trying it, and then it just, that continues and continues, and then everyone else starts getting worse as well. It's quite a dangerous place, to be honest,
you know,
on social
what?
Media.
Do you think it's the people who are copying that, they're sort of it's a form of attention seeking and one-upmanship on one another, saying,
no,
look.
I don't think it's attention seeking. I think it's more, you need to prove to yourself that you're ill.
Right.
You feel, some people, especially me as well, I was always telling myself, well, I'm not sick enough to need to recover, you know? And then, but you end up chasing that, oh, getting sick enough, so then you know you can recover then, but there's no sick enough. if you already feel like you need to prove to yourself you're ill, like,
yeah,
you know, that it's like that. It's not, you know, doing it for other people's attention. It's more just prove to yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
So your advice to those people who are looking at that?
If you're on TikTok, click not interested for anything negative. Anything. This is what I have to do. Like everything about recovery or, you know, getting better or things like that. Because it tends to be, especially if you're on TikTok, you don't even need to follow people. It depends what you like. And it will keep coming up and coming up and coming up. So just be wary. These things will trigger you even if you don't see it. Like you don't see it in yourself, it will make it competitive for you. You want to get like them and stuff. Everyone's on their own journey. You don't need to compare yourself to others. And if you think that you're not ill enough to recover, you are already ill, because well people don't feel the need to prove to themselves that they're unwell.
Very good point. I suppose the problem is with social media, you know, people are maybe are searching that type of content out, and then like the algorithms start just bringing them more content,
yeah,
related to those sort of subjects,
yeah,
and it becomes like, I suppose, I mean, we're all a bit of addicted to like these social media platforms and our mobile phones,
yeah,
and we're looking at that all the time, and then it wants to keep you engaged.
Yeah.
So it's them bringing this constant information about whatever it may well be for that particular person, and it's self-perpetuating. It carries on going, doesn't it?
Mm. This,
I mean,
is
it's
what
pretty
happens.
Bad.
You like one thing, the next 10 videos will be about it. That's, it's just how it goes on there, especially on TikTok. Instagram, it's now started doing reels, which is pretty much like TikTok, but you need to... you can follow them.
Yeah.
With TikTok, you can follow them, but on your For You page, it's very unlikely to actually see the people you follow.
Yeah.
They bring you new people, and then you start liking it, and then again, it keeps continuing and continuing and continuing. It's just a spiral, especially if you're liking quite harmful content.
I suppose the social media companies really need to... Oh, look at these pigeons. Look, they're not even worried about us. And ducks. Apparently you're not allowed to feed ducks bread.
No, I heard that as well, but I still do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Apparently frozen peas, they like frozen peas. They like frozen vegetables, like peas and stuff like that. That's the thing to feed them. I mean, look, I don't know, that's what I heard. Probably maybe RSPCA is going to say, look, what's the matter with you? Give ducks frozen peas. Right. But yeah, bread is apparently not good. I suppose, really, not to give him anything. Look at him, he's a beautiful bird, isn't it? Yeah, maybe social media companies need to do more to prevent that sort of content going out. You know, change the algorithms. If someone's actively seeking that, that's maybe one thing that is hard to stop. Oh, look at these little babies. Oh, baby, what are they, geese? Should we take one home? I think his mum won't be happy. Yeah, maybe we should, I don't know, what can they do?
Well, there is quite a few bits on social media. If you search something, it will say like help is available and stuff like that. But people find ways to...
So conveniently go around it.
Yeah, go around it. Like they use different words, like code words for like... For anorexia, they would put Anna and then pretend it's like a girl. For bulimia, they put Mia. You know, so the algorithm's not picking that up. They're sharing it and sharing it. This is what happens. People then use code names. You can search that in. Boom, done. It's on there.
Yeah. Right, never break for a second. Hot chocolate? You a hot chocolate girl?
Yeah.
You a hot chocolate girl? I'm a hot chocolate boy. Take a seat, I'll be back in a minute. So we were discussing about the effects of social media.
Yeah.
Or the negative effects of social media. So do you have to wean yourself off that?
It's it for me, it depends on what frame of mind I'm in. Some people, they actually create other accounts.
Fake accounts?
Yeah, so not fake accounts, but like they call them vent accounts.
Vent?
Yeah, so like...
Bloody hell, you're an authority on this, aren't you?
So they...
Hold on one sec, let me just straighten this out. Sorry.
It's all right.
Hopefully it'll be all right.
Yeah,
okay. What's a vent account?
So people post like quite triggering things on there. They try to, you know, use a different name so people don't know it's them.
Right.
They try and hide it, you know. If they're struggling, they post on there. Sometimes it can help people because it's like a way of getting out your feelings and emotions, but you tend to then spiral, especially if you're on that account a lot.
Yeah.
I used to have them, and eventually I thought, I can't, like, I need to just delete. So I then created a new one. Well, not a vent account, a new social media account. And I'm just trying to spread like, positivity and stuff instead of, you know, going down that rabbit hole again.
Yeah.
Mm.
Man, it's a whole world, isn't it? It's a whole world.
Yeah. The thing is, it's just... It's sad because it's getting younger and younger. There are people like 9, 10 years old on the, you know, trying to take their life. And
yeah.
It's sad to see. And especially a lot of people, you do actually see, like, they'll write like a goodbye post.
Yeah.
And then people will be putting like RIP like a couple of days later. And so you realise they did actually do it, which is very sad, to be honest.
It's tragic. It's even tragic.
Mm.
I mean, I don't even know how to even contemplate that in my head, you know? I mean, I've never thought in those terms.
Yeah.
You know, even in dark times in my life, I've never really even entered those sort of thoughts. And for someone so young to think about that, you know, and hopefully they're not seeing that off social media and think, okay, this is a solution for me, because... Once you're gone, you know, there's no coming back.
Exactly.
You know? And this it's so sad. There are other ways to deal with it, you know?
Yeah. And there's a lot of, on the positive side, there are quite a few survivors of their own suicide attempts, and they've, like, spoke up and said, like, you don't want to do this. Like, please, like, people with family members that have committed suicide are on there trying to spread awareness and trying to get people to help, especially like people are supporting charities now, really trying to put the effort in because it's happening so often.
Yeah.
It's once you're in that, you realise how much it's really happening.
Yeah.
You don't really see it because no one really talks about it. That's one of those things.
So where are you now? How are you feeling now?
At the moment, I'm really good, to be honest. I'm listening to my body more. I'm not trying to, like, you know, put pressure on myself to do stuff. If I'm feeling tired, I'm going to go lay in bed. You know, I'm not going to be like, oh, no, I need to stay up. I need to do this. If I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. I'm just trying to put my needs first, especially being autistic. And because I was only diagnosed at 20, so last year, I'm still learning like how to actually help myself and my needs. So I'm working on it. Sometimes I do have my down days, but I'm definitely in a much better place than I was before.
That's great to hear, actually.
Mm.
I mean, you said that Magic Life has really helped you. Is it because we've just understood you better?
Yeah, it's just everyone, it's like a family, you know? We do have our, you know, odd argument or whatever, but we're all human.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get upset and things like that. But especially my house, I love it. Honestly, I wouldn't change it. It's really, really good in there. Sometimes it can be quite stressful, but...
What's the stressful elements? What, just arguments and stuff?
Yeah, you know, just arguments and...
But that sort of happens in most family environments,
exactly,
doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
You've got to learn to deal with that.
It's like a home from home, you know?
Yeah.
You know, before I wouldn't call it, my old supported livings, I wouldn't call it home, but here I'm like, oh, I need to go home. You know, I will.
It makes me feel really quiet. where it can get me emotional,
yeah,
but really happy at the same time.
Mm.
Because, you know, you're coming to a place that isn't your home, and now you're calling it your home.
Mm.
How do you interact with the staff? How have they been towards you?
They've been good. We are laughing quite a lot.
Hold on one sec. You crying?
What? What's up?
You can tell us how you feel. This is Fifi. She's a support staff, and I think she's getting a bit emotional. It's nice to hear, isn't it?
Yeah. Honestly, they, the staff don't realise how much they're doing for us. The patience they have is unreal. Like, we can really be a nightmare sometimes, and obviously,
yeah, someone needs some help.
Obviously, we are unwell, but the patience, especially coming from, you know, the family issues from their own homes and stuff, they're doing a really good job. They are.
Yeah. We see it. We've had some heart-wrenching moments, and we've attended ceremonies of remembrance, and all of the staff that are there, they're all crying.
Mm.
So it's a difficult thing for people to understand that you get emotionally involved with supporting people in their journeys, right? I mean, we've had some wonderful cases as well where we've had residents or supported people move on to their own living accommodation, and that's the ultimate aim for us, is where we want people to thrive in their life, go out into the world independently and live a fulfilling and happy life.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may be at this point here, but that doesn't, it's not where it's going to end, you know. With help and support, you can go on to live a happy, productive life independently of Magic Life, which is the ultimate aim.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what we want for everyone. Yeah. Obviously, in some cases, that's not possible, but the ultimate aim is that. And it makes me feel really happy when I see people like that care and move on, you know. I'll cry at anything. I cry at a bacon sandwich.
Both of you are crying.
Yeah. Because we care, you know?
Yeah.
People actually are in this role because they want to care for people. So anyway, what's your future plans? Where do you want to go on from here?
Well, I got accepted into uni to study psychology.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
It's open uni, so it's all online, which is actually quite beneficial for me. So eventually, I'm either thinking of, you know, going into clinical psychology, which is going to be quite a few years, maybe. I think it's around average 9 years to become a clinical psychologist. Or I'm going to go into psychology, but with neurodiversity, so autism, ADHD, dyslexia, OCD, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that would be quite good because it's quite close to my heart, obviously.
Well, of course, you've got personal experience, haven't you? You can impart a lot of wisdom, you know, and help people on their journeys. So advice to young people or anyone suffering from EUPD and autism and what was the other?
Complex PTSD.
Yeah.
Just reach out, and if people keep denying you, keep going. Keep nagging if you have to. This is what I had to do for a long time. Look into therapies. I think DBT therapy is very good.
Is that marijuana?
No.
What is it? What's that?
Dialectical behavioural therapy. It's like CBT, but it's a bit more, you work on coping skills for people with like very impulsive decisions, self-harm, management of things like that, you know. I think that's a good help for many, many people.
Give me an example. Explain it for me.
So, it would, you know how therapy, everyone's like, well, I know what to do to make myself better, but we don't actually do it. We just continue like self-sabotaging, making it worse. With DBT, it will tell you the skills. Some of them can seem really basic, like, you know, have a cold shower or exercise or write down your feelings, but it's actually the steps before that that changes your way of thinking. Instead of thinking like, oh, I'm going to go and hurt myself, you think, actually, let me try this. I'm going to do this first. I'm going to write this down. And then I'm going to have a cold shower, because that sets your nervous system. It gives you a shock.
Right.
Some people also, if you are like involved with self-harm, people hold ice cubes in their hand because it will hurt.
Right.
You still get that kind of relief. Some people, they say it's not the same, and it's not going to be the same because it's not the same thing, but you'll find the thing that works for you, that keeps you going eventually.
What's it called again?
DBT, Dialectical Behavioural Therapy.
I think you should come and give some lectures on that one. DBT. Mm. I never heard of it.
It's not new, but it's being talked about more.
Yeah.
It was.
So it's like a coping mechanism, is it?
It's like they teach you coping skills. A lot of coping skills. They help with like your sense of identity as well. It's very, very broad. Usually people do it for like a year, 2 years, just every week, you know, doing it. Usually group session. Some people start with just one-to-one, depending. But it's really good. I've only had a couple of sessions, and they said I was deemed too unwell at that point to continue doing it.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to get back into it. I've done a lot of research, and it's, you know, even just from the things I've learned, I'm already implementing them in my life.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they help.
Yeah.
That's great. That is really great.
Mm.
You've got a plan, haven't you, girl?
Yeah.
You've got a path forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose just by having that, you know, a vision of what recovery may look like for yourself, or the vision to living a different type of life is part of the journey already to getting better.
Yeah.
You know?
Setting goals. It really works.
Yeah.
You know, like saying, oh, I'm going to make it till tomorrow, not hurting myself. And then you reach that goal. You're like, okay, now I'm going to make it to the next day. This is what I do. When I'm really stressed out, I say, no, I'll leave it till tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes, no, leave it till tomorrow. And I just keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
Yeah.
And then eventually you've hit a week, a month, a year, you know.
And it's really a distant past.
Yeah.
Distant part of your life that you don't need to.
And eventually it just doesn't even come into mind. You completely forget about it.
Morgan, you're a superstar, love. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Fifi, dry up your tears. You're doing a great job. And we have some other Magic Life residents here, as you can see.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And again, Morgan, honestly, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And we'll catch up again soon, yeah?
Yeah. All right. Thank you.